Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Today, former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, West Texas devotee, that's a fancy word, and former, yes, it is not an oxymoron, military intelligence officer, Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon.
Boy, I don't know how I can follow that up, man. Thank you very much, Bruce. I'm here.
You're welcome. Joining Truman is Truman's wingmate, advocate, arbitrator, mediator, Fulbright specialist, and former Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks, Bruce. Good
and
to be here.
Joining us by Zoom from his home is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate, or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones.
That is me, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Bruce.
Good. And I'm Bruce Hallman, zooming in from my Vachon home. And joining us today, joining us by Zoom, are Bianca Perla and Maria Mettler, two of the moving forces behind the Vachon Nature Center. Welcome, Bianca.
Thanks, Bruce. Nice and to be here.
Good to have you. And welcome, Maria.
Thank you so much. Excited to join the show today.
Good. Before we jump into talking about the Vachon Nature Center, let's take a moment and check in with everyone about what special things you have experienced this week. So, Craig, what's going on in your world?
Well, I had the pleasure of going to VCA this weekend and listening to the chorale. The music, the Christmas carols of the 19th century are somewhat discordant. They're almost like modern jazz, you know, in a way. You're looking for the melody, but it never kind of comes through.
Oh, interesting.
You know, you've got to, and it's not easy to sing. They asked me to sit in on one of those and sing here a couple years ago, and you got to hit those notes right on, but they don't naturally follow like we're kind of used to, or at least for me. But yeah, that's, the, you know, and been up working around the house, taking care of the horses, the dogs, the cats. My wife is up on Orcas Island this week, which is great for her. I think she's going to have some beautiful weather coming our way. So that's pretty much what I'm up to.
Good. Sounds like a full week. Maria, how about you?
Yes. Well, I just wanted to remind everyone it's National Ice Cream Day. And one of the things that we do here with the Nature Center is go to the shorelines and monitor for forage fish research. And right now, it's a great time to go down there and see all sorts of seaweeds and kelps. And those are important ingredients in ice cream. So I got the pleasure of going down to Colville's Passage and seeing an amazing diversity of seaweed and kelp on our shoreline that had just washed up with the high tide. So you don't even have to get your toes wet. That was my fun memory from this last week.
Oh, great. So the kelp forests are starting to return?
That's questionable. This isn't so much large bull kelp, but this different lots of different species of seaweeds and other macroalgae in addition to the kelp we have here.
Oh, great. Exciting. An exciting connection to Ice Cream Day, of course. Kevin, how about you?
Thank you for asking, Bruce. I just have two words. Senator Warnock.
Yay.
You know, we're all consumed. I was fairly seriously consumed by all of the election, not only, of course, locally, state of Washington, but also nationally. And the good Reverend Warnock has prevailed and will leave us with a majority in the U.S. Senate for the next 2 years. So I'm quite happy to see that outcome.
Yes. It's also discouraging to realize 1.8 million people voted for his opponent.
Oh my gosh.
That's sort of a sobering kind of insight as well. So there's something there, right?
I think we're used to that.
The only silver lining that I can get out of that statistic, Bruce, and it doesn't land well always, but at least 3.5 million Georgia voters voted for a person of color in the runoff election. That's all I can say.
That's true.
Significant, for sure. So Truman, how about you?
Well, in your wonderful introduction of me, you left out the surviving back patient or back surgery patient. And so I'm still fighting this darn thing. It was back in August I got the surgery, and I'm still fighting it. I'm going in for a second MRI tonight. And hopefully we can figure out what's causing this, continually causing this pain. I'm like way better than when I had the surgery, but still not quite 100%. So that's my big news. I'm going in to find out what's going on. So
we all wish you luck, for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That is interesting that you're getting an MRI in the middle of the night.
Yeah, 9:45 at night.
What do? They run that 24/7?
They must run it 24/7. Oh. Yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe it.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bianca, how about you? What's going on in your world?
Well, there's two fun international events going on this time of year. One is the World Cup, and my whole family's crazy about it, so I've become a fan. So I have my phone here. I'm watching the scoreboard for the Argentina-Croatia game right now. But also another big international event that I'm paying attention to is the COP15 Convention on Biological Diversity meetings that are going on in Montreal. They're discussing 21 targets designed for protecting Earth's life support systems. So it's pretty interesting to me for the future of our planet, and just pretty cool that all of these countries, 196 nations, can get together and discuss that. Wow. So,
and what is it called again? What is it called again, Bianca?
It's called COP15. It's a United Nations get together. Conference of the Parties is what COP stands for. It's the 15th annual. I don't know why they call it annual, because it's been more than 15 years. But Convention on Biological Diversity was written in 1993. And so it's the conference of all the parties to that agreement. And they meet almost every year to discuss pathways forward and progress.
Thank you.
Oh, good. So has Croatia scored yet?
Nope. Is that who you're rooting for, Bruce?
Zilch. Well, if you go to sporties, you have to
I know. I'm actually torn in this one because of sporties. I want to vote for Croatia or support right. Croatia, but then it's Messi's last World Cup, and he's on Argentina. So, you know, feel bad for him losing, too.
Yes. You know, as I look at my phone, it looks like they may have moved the game until 1. Has it started on, do you know?
I don't know. All I see is a scoreboard.
Okay, because all of a sudden I saw 11 o'clock, and then I saw 1 o'clock. It's like they changed it or something. I'm voting for Croatia. I'm half Croatian, so I'm there. The underdogs.
I'll let you know if the scoreboard changes.
Okay.
All right. I'm sure sporties will be jumping at through the game. You know, they probably have the tier set up so you can get the whole crowd in there. It's going to be interesting. So, wow. Well, for me this week, I had the pleasure of meeting a sculptor on the island who came here the same year I did, 1973, so almost 50 years ago. And we had not met until this past week. His name's Bill Dilley. He's a sculptor here on the island, and somebody donated to the museum one of his sculpts, sort of a monumental, it's about 6 foot tall, carved out of ancient wood that he found under a sand dune in Oregon when he was working down in Oregon. But the title of it is Portal to the Past, which is great for a museum. So we now have the Vashon Heritage Museum now has a Bill Dilley sculpture titled Portal to the Past that we're going to hopefully put somewhere out near the Habitat Garden, that Audubon and part of the Natural Wonder exhibit. So a very exciting sort of addition to the museum. Kevin.
Well, Bruce, we may have to, in addition to Galaxy of the Guardian, Guardian of the Galaxy, sorry, think of you as also a portal to the past.
Portal to the past.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We'll remember that. By the way, the game is on. I have it on the computer right here watching it. So I'll let you know if I see anything exciting. So.
All right. Good to know. Well, today, like every day, is a significant day. And as Maria pointed out, it's National Ice Cream Day. But it's also National Violin Day, National Hot Cocoa Day, and to just give us a sense of how old we all are, it's the day in 1989 that Taylor Swift was born.
Oh, my gosh.
Happy birthday, Taylor.
89, good grief.
Yeah.
I know, just seems like yesterday, right? Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. This is also the day in 1937 that the Japanese Imperial Army seized Nanjing, leading to the Nanjing Massacre, in which over 300,000 Chinese were killed. And a reminder why it's important to support Ukraine against authoritarian Russian aggression. And today, December 13th, 1642, is the day that Abel Tasman sighted New Zealand. And of course, I'll be heading to New Zealand in about a month. So I'm very eager to return down under. But let's move into the small talk session and our talk about the Vashon Nature Center. And again, we have Bianca Perla, the founder, and we have Maria Mettler, who is the education programs manager for the Vashon Nature Center. And the Vashon Nature Center, it was formed to connect people with nature to one another while experiencing the wonders of being in the natural world through citizen science. And you, Bianca and Maria, are the dynamos behind the Vashon Nature Center. So could you take a minute and tell us a little bit about yourself, what inspired you to create the Vashon Nature Center, and what you've been doing with it? Bianca, let's start with you.
Okay, thanks, Bruce. I grew up here, and I think that had a lot to do with my love of nature from early on and the great mentors that I had. Lots of people here that love nature and know how to take care of it in lots of different ways. Despite having a great childhood here, I couldn't wait to leave, like most high schoolers. So I left for college. I couldn't get out of here fast enough. And I spent some time working other places. And gradually it kind of dawned on me that I had it pretty good here. It's a beautiful spot. And you don't really appreciate it until you leave and see other places and talk to, you know, had lots of colleagues in science that were saying, oh, I would never move back to the place that I left. It was destroyed. It's terrible. You know, it looks awful now. And so it just kind of planted a seed in my mind of, wow, you know, Vashon's a pretty special place. And then I was working in the Grand Canyon as a field scientist, and I had a mentor who had his doctorate. He was the senior scientist that I was working with. And we got into a conversation one day about whether I wanted to go back and get my doctorate or not. And I said, no, you know, I don't want to be that specialized. I don't want to zoom in so far to some creature. And he said, well, you don't have to specialize in a creature. You could specialize in a place. And as soon as he said that, you know, he had specialized in the Grand Canyon. He knew all about the geology, he knew the ecology, he knew the history. And I really looked up to him for that kind of holistic view. And Vashon popped into my mind right away when he said that. And so that told me something as well. So I did come back here. I didn't study Vashon for my doctorate, but I did come back here and I just got reconnected with the land here and with the community, and was on the land trust board trying to help with conservation prioritization, you know, what should we conserve, and realized that we just didn't really have a lot of information on a local scale. However, we had, you know, that was readily available. However, we had a ton of information in the minds of a lot of people who have been here a long time and who really were tuned into this place and to nature. And so that's when the idea of the Nature Center formed, as, you know, let's make a community and a place where these people can share their knowledge and we can all learn together about Vashon and steward it better. And so that was kind of the grand experiment that I launched after I was done with my doctorate. That's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
And the experiment continues, right?
Yeah.
Maria, how about you?
Well, kind of similar to Bianca, I thought that I would go far, far away from the place where I was born and raised, which I'm often asked if I was born and raised on Vashon. And the answer is no. I'm just a few miles north up the Puget Sound, my hometown of Edmonds, Washington. Had a really similar feel to Vashon in a lot of ways. And like I said, I thought I would move far, far away. But in some ways, Vashon feels like a whole world away from the mainland Puget Sound bustle and hustle. So I came back here. I moved here in 2005, shortly after college. It wasn't until the first BioBlitz, though, with Vashon Nature Center, where I really felt like I'd found the people that I knew were here down the long driveways and under the shadows of the firs. People like Bianca said, who valued nature and intrinsically just found things that were considered intrinsically valued to be essentially valuable, who were willing to pause and explore and wonder and ponder. And so I just was so sparked by that first BioBlitz and couldn't really shake my desire to do more. My background is in environmental education and field research. And so this community that we've been able to form through Vashon Nature Center has enabled me to do both of those things in the community that I love and for the community that I love. So it's perfect.
That's great.
Great. So part of the Vashon Nature Center is the concept of citizen science. Could you tell us a little bit about what citizen science is, and then use that as an entree into talking about the BioBlitzes and what you've been doing with BioBlitzes?
Yeah, sure. Citizen science really is just, it's about people power in science. So it's really about connecting local people to science and making science a community-based thing instead of having it, you know, just based in a government agency or an ivory tower situation, you know, institution. So it's about kind of bringing science to the people and bringing people to the science, having people help out scientists. And so, you know, for our programs, people come out into the field with us and help us collect data and about all different types of things on Vashon. And the reason that it's such a great model is people get a chance to see things with their own eyes and contribute to this information collecting. And also, nature is huge and it's complicated. And some things are really long term. And in order to sustain a data set that you can actually say something about with nature and actually have any sort of degree of certainty, you need a ton of data to kind of overwhelm the natural variation that you get. And so it's just such a big help to have people out there that have their own spots that they keep going back to and contributing data over a long period of time and a huge spatial scale. A lot of our projects are based on Vashon, but they hook into larger projects that are happening all over the Puget Sound. So you get the same amount of people taking data from, you know, Nisqually Wildlife Refuge all the way up to the Canadian border and sometimes beyond. And you have then you have a powerful data set that you can say something about and learn from. And that's not something that scientists a lot of the times can do on their own. Sometimes with remote imaging and things, they can answer certain questions, but a lot of the biological questions that need to be answered really require closer examination. And that's where citizen scientists come in.
Truman.
You know, it strikes me that that we have this a large anti-science, I would like to call it, population in the United States that deny a lot of scientific data. And this strikes me as a really wonderful way to change that mindset and to get people involved in science and respecting what you do. So I really commend you for that. I think that's a great, great thing.
Thanks, Truman. And I think that's a really good point that a lot of how we experience the world is through our own eyes. And so, you know, it's hard to trust scientists sometimes or anybody, especially if you associate them with a power structure. So, you know, I just it reminds me of I did some research in Idaho when they were deciding to introduce wolves, Idaho and Montana. And there was a rancher that was just, you know, he had cattle and he was afraid of the wolves threatening his cattle. And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service ended up giving him the radio transmitter for the collars so he could see and he could participate in tracking the movements. And over time, completely changed his whole view of the wolves, you know, and saying he was like, wow, they really work hard. He had a respect for them that he didn't have before because he realized how hard they worked to get their food and how what, you know, distances they covered. And, you know, that's not something that's something that he had to discover for himself. He wouldn't have taken U.S. Fish and Wildlife's word for it, you know, because that's the power struggle there. So, yeah, I think it's true. There's a lot to be said.
And when you convert him, he's going to convert.
What'd you say?
When you convert him, he's going to convert his friends.
Yeah.
You know, the other landowners and ranchers in the area. So good on you.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the BioBlitzes. I mean, the first one is in 2012. So 10 years BioBlitzes have been going on. Tell us a little bit about the BioBlitzes and what they are, how they work. You know, what you've discovered from the BioBlitzes.
Okay. Maria, feel free to chime in if I'm forgetting some things here, but I'll just say kind of in general what a BioBlitz is, and then we can both talk about our favorite findings maybe. So in general, a BioBlitz is a 24-hour species survey. So members of the public and scientists and naturalists that are good at identifying things of all come together and form teams. And those survey teams go out in a specified area. So in 2012, we did Neal Point Natural Area, which was a new natural area at the time that King County had just purchased on the southeastern tip of Vashon. And nobody knew about it and nobody knew what was there. So it was kind of a fun kickoff to the BioBlitz. And so we just let these teams loose and they take pictures and identify as many animals and plants and fungi and that they can identify in 24 hours. So it gives you a snapshot and each time it's 24 hours. So it's a concerted effort that's pretty standardized each time. And then we just bounce around the island and do different spots. And it's fun because you get to really see the island in depth and all of the different creatures that live right alongside you. It's really eye-opening. It was eye-opening for me. And I had been, you know, I had a doctorate in ecology and I couldn't believe how much stuff we were finding that I had never noticed before. So it's an amazing time to just revel in the wonder of nature and collect some great data about what's here and also share it with others.
How big an area?
Love of nature.
How big an area do you look at, Bianca?
It depends, but I think the biggest BioBlitz we covered was all of the preserves on Maury Island. So that's Docton Park, Maury Island Marine Park, Maury Natural Area, And, you know, sometimes we do, like we did the lower Shingle Mill watershed. Fern Cove area. It's not a standardized area. Each time it's more of a,
and how many people participate?
We get usually over 100 people participating. Yeah. Wow. So I think our first BioBlitz was the smallest. It was 75, at Neal Point. And then it's just grown since then. Wow. Yeah. I think our biggest was the Maury Island effort. And I think that was close to, that was over 200 people. Wow. It was almost 250 that came to that.
And you get to stay up all night and see all kinds of wonderful things.
Yeah. And, you know, and the kids that participate get to spend the night, you know, at these places, which is super fun. My kids grew up doing that, and some of their friends, and some, you know, girls, we had Girl Scout troops come spend the night at Liza Bula, you know, kind of, it's a really fun, different window on this place. Yeah.
And we often are able to pull in experts from other places around the region too. So not only are we bringing in our own community, but we're introducing our island to other people that have so much to share. And like at this one, this last summer, we had a wonderful bumblebee researcher from Bainbridge Island come down. And we've had folks from Galliano Island assist us. So it's a really fun way to both really focus on our community and draw in some others from other areas.
And all that data is available on your website, right? I mean, the past BioBlitz is available. And if you haven't visited the Vashon Nature Center's website, please do. I think it's VashonNatureCenter.org.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That's it.
Yeah, it is a magnificent website. It's very well done. And you do have most of the past BioBlitzes on the website, right?
Yeah, we have a lot. We've taken all of our data and put it onto iNaturalist. So there's a link there that goes to the Vashon Biodiversity Project on iNaturalist. So you can see, it's a great way because you can then explore a map and look at where all of the different sightings came from. And you can see pictures of what different things are.
Yeah. Maria, tell our audience a little bit about iNaturalist and what it is and how it works, how they can access it.
Yes, iNaturalist is a really fun, interactive app. You can also access it through your mobile or through your desktop computer. But it's an app that is housed through, is it University of California? And they use all of our observations. So anyone can go out and take a photograph of any kind of organism they see in nature, plant, animal, fungus, and identify it as closely as you can. So if I know it's a tree, I could identify it as a tree. If I know it's a pine in the pine family, I could go that far. And then other experts are alerted to that observation, and they can help you create, turn it into essentially a scientific grade research observation through peer reviewed agreement. So people come together, and there's often some really interesting discourse and respectful debate that can go on there in terms of what people are seeing and how it's being identified. In fact, the New York Times just covered iNaturalist in a really great article about how it might be one of the nicest corners on the internet. Hmm. So it's really fun. It's a free app. You can use it anywhere you go in the world, which is something it's really useful for me when I travel to learn about what I'm seeing. And all of that, then, like Bianca said, just by taking the photograph and uploading it, it's mappable. It attaches to the GIS location in your phone. And so you can see these observations and how they distribute across the land throughout the whole world.
So, and people can access that just by Googling iNaturalist?
Yes, it's at iNaturalist.org, or you can find it in the App Store. It's available on iPhone and Android. You can create your own projects. So what Bianca has done for every BioBlitz is a project that captures all of those observations. We also have just a Vashon biodiversity project that any observation you make within that project boundary automatically gets added to that. So it's a really great way to simply add to our biodiversity research here on the island, or create your own little challenges. Like I have my own property map and I'm trying to catalog all the different species. Our friend Catherine True has a goal to catalog, what is it, 1,000 species mm-hmm. on her property this year. I'm not quite sure how close she is, but.
Which is a definition of citizen science, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, it is. It is an excellent example of citizen science that you can do self-paced on your own time. You don't, and anywhere you want. You don't have to affiliate with an organization or anything like that.
Great. So, Maria, as education sort of director for the Nature Center, you've done a lot with science in the schools and workshops. Could you talk a little bit about what the Nature Center is doing with the Vashon School District?
Sure, I'd love to. One of my favorite parts of my job is everything I get to do with the Vashon Island School District. And we, Bianca, created Scientist in Schools in 2014. We had our first unit in the sixth grade class. And there had been some talk. It all started at a workshop, and I believe it was a butterfly survey that I didn't participate in, but there was talk generated of, wow, this is so fun coming together and doing this community science. I would love to offer it to my students. At the same time, the Groundwater Protection Committee was looking for folks or looking for support to monitor some of the streams here on the island. And so we synced this model together of having bringing real hands-on science opportunities into the classroom for students. This last year, we worked with about 45% of students throughout the district. So it's grown quite a bit in the last 9 or 10 years. And we have a goal to create systemic programming. Whenever we develop a new program, we aim to target to reach and work with every student in across the grade so that we're providing an equitable and systemic experience and introduction into hands-on science and how we can all participate.
Fantastic. It's great work you guys are doing with the schools for sure. I had the pleasure of working with both of you guys. Yep. Sorry.
I just arged because Argentina scored
on a penalty kick. There you go.
Oh, no. Who scored?
We're multitasking here.
Argentina.
Argentina's ahead. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay. An acceptable interruption.
Sorry.
Right? Anything for the World Cup, right?
Yeah.
So I had the pleasure of working with both of you guys on the exhibit at the Heritage Museum called Natural Wonder, an island shaped by water. It was scheduled to open, I think, in 2020, and then called COVID kind of interfered with that. And it was kind of a staged opening, and it's been open for most of this year, and it's going to be open for another year until the museum closes for the permanent exhibit installation. So could you tell us a little bit about Natural Wonder and the inspiration for it and how it has turned out?
Yeah, you know, I think I had the pleasure of serving on as a board member with the Vashon Heritage Museum, where I got to meet you, Bruce, and learn all about how much goes into coordinating and putting together a special exhibit, and really how lucky we are as a community to have that offered through our museum. I've gone to lots of small town museums where it's their one permanent exhibit. And it can come across as somewhat stagnant, but what our museum does by offering these rotating exhibits and special exhibits that are then often incorporated into the main part of our museum display, I just thought was really a really neat thing. And what I saw when I walked in was just a little bit of absence of the voice of nature in our island's story and our island's history. So Natural Wonder was an attempt to elevate that story of nature and how it supports and sustains us and elevate the voices of those who have been taking care of the lands and waters here for so long. it was really important too, as a natural history exhibit, to incorporate as many members of the community as we could, and island artists to tap into that power of blending science and art. So another fun thing, although it's natural history, there's over 38 artists whose work is on display as part of that exhibit, from mostly from the island, but also from around the region.
Yeah, Bianca, could you talk people through the exhibit a little bit and what they will see if they go visit? And I encourage everybody to go visit Natural Wonder.
Yeah, sure, Bruce. Well, when you walk in, the first thing you'll see is an artist rendering of Annie Brule, who is a local illustrator, has a map that shows influx of all these different species to and from the island through seasons. That's kind of a fun thing to look at, you know, in case there's a line and you can't get in the exhibit right away, you can spend some time with that map. It's beautiful. And it gives you a sense of Vashon and where it is in the Salish Sea and kind of what roles it plays ecologically. And the theme of the exhibit, an island shaped by water. And so we talk a little bit about, you know, what does it mean to be an island for our natural history? How does that set us apart from the mainland and other places around the Puget Sound? And so what does that water boundary do in terms of impacting our ecology and shaping it? And then what does that do for us as islanders in our human communities? We're really tied to the water. And so we explore that connection as well through the exhibit. The exhibit is laid out in a geographical way and in a seasonal way. So, you know, we have art on the four in four windows that actually point the directions of where you'll see those places. So, you know, KVI is, there's a mural of KVI to the east and to Fern Cove to the northwest. And so you can explore those different nature scenes, and each one has a different season that it shows. Fern Cove, I think, is in autumn, so you see the salmon coming back. KVI is in winter, so you see the orcas off in the distance. So you can see kind of how everything is evolving through and moving through the year and the seasons. And then you enter the exhibit through the water. So you go in to what we call our Puget Sound portal. So you go underwater like you're a salmon approaching the island. And so you get to learn about the underwater world first. And then it's like you're migrating from the Puget Sound and then up Shingle Mill Creek to a center tree, which is the headwaters, which is basically right where the museum is, because town is the headwaters for many of our creeks, actually. Mm-hmm. Shingle Mill Creek goes north west from there. Judd Creek goes southeast from there, and then also Gorsuch and Ellisport. So we've kind of mapped out in the exhibit a microcosm of how the island is actually situated. And then you kind of flow down Judd Creek out the door, and you're into Quartermaster Harbor, and then you can flow into the backyard and learn about geology and what underpins our whole island. And then there's some habitat gardens that the Audubon created for us in the back, so you can learn about native plants. It's a very rich exhibit and lots of layers, so you can go back, you know, many different times and concentrate on different things.
It's a great description. It is an incredible exhibit and one really worth visiting. I encourage you to visit it. Truman.
Two things. Argentina just scored again, so now it's 2-0. And the second question is, with our water barrier that you were describing, how do we get some of these critters here? For example, the coyotes. I mean, did they swim across? Did people bring them? How do we end up with coyotes here?
Yeah, good question. The most probable hypothesis is that they did swim across Colvos, just like deer, probably even, maybe even following deer, because we've had, if you look in the newspaper articles from a long time ago, Mike Suddeth was really great for in helping us put together a lot of big, huge store of newspaper articles in our research for this natural history exhibit. The earliest record we have is in the 1960s of a coyote, and it was a lone coyote that was shot here. And so, we have a picture from that and everything, so we know it was here. So, it's possible that they just swam over as loners once in a while, the dispersers. And at some point, probably late 90s, because equestrians said that they started hearing howls around then, around Paradise Ridge area. And that would indicate more than one, because they tend to not howl when they're solitary. So probably late 90s, two happened to, be here at the same time. And there we go. We've done some genetic studies, which are really interesting, with the UW, trying to figure out where are our coyotes coming from and what's the genetic diversity. And that's been really interesting so far, because they are not very genetically diverse. So it suggests a founding population and very little immigration, maybe once every 20 years or something comes over, and contributes some more genetic diversity. But it's a lot like what's happening with the sea wolves up in Canada, where you have a population that made it to these, to Vancouver Island. And, we're just doing a wildlife cam study and noticing there's a lot of coyote activity on the shorelines. So we're wondering, is their diet changing? Are they scavenging? They've got to be scavenging what's coming up. And that's a lot of what is happening with sea wolves in Canada. So are we on the brink of getting some sort of a new subspecies of coyote here eventually, which would be kind of an interesting thing. So yeah, islands definitely can contribute to some different stuff for ecology.
Speaking of coyotes, I have to tell you, I've showed you the one video that I captured. I have two trail cameras that I have out. And one, have a beautiful daylight shot of a coyote standing and suddenly looks over your shoulder and just takes off running. And the next thing you see is this doe come striding through. And boy, she is stomping the ground. She is after that coyote. I mean, it was fascinating. I was very surprised. And my second video that I just got was here comes a raccoon at night. Here comes a raccoon, and coming up behind him is a coyote. Just, tiptoe, he's coming up on him, and they go off camera, and then you hear this growl, and all of a sudden the coyote comes flying back into the frame, spins around, and goes racing back off again. So I don't know what happened. I didn't find any fur in my driveway, but I found that really interesting that he was challenging a raccoon, and the raccoon said, back off,
We've got a great one of a river otter and a coyote getting into on the beach, and the river otter certainly wins.
Hands down.
especially if you can get the coyote in the water.
I
don't mean to take us down this coyote hole, but this whole topic sort of kind of defines your mission in a way. There are certain things, for example, coyotes are kind of controversial on the island, but you're not, there are certain aspects of the coyote population that you're not involved in. You're witnessing the coyotes, you're tracking the coyotes. Mm-hmm. You've obviously learned a lot about the coyotes in the process and know a lot about it. There are people on the island who despise coyotes.
Yeah.
On your website, you have a fair amount of space dedicated to how to coexist with predators on the island, which is really good. You're really sort of non-judgmental about the coyotes or the cougars or the bears or whatever the case may be, or raccoons. And it's hard to be non-judgmental about raccoons sometimes. But but that's true, isn't it? I mean, that's
yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it. I mean, I guess what we mostly are is we approach things with curiosity. You know, we don't know the answer, you know, any more than anybody else. And so it's more of our approach is let's be curious together and let's find out what's really going on together, which is a slightly different approach, I think, than in the past in terms of environmental work, you know, where you have that sort of top down, this is what's true and this is what we're going to shove down your throat.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's, I think curiosity and I think that's the power of science, right? It makes you suspend your judgment a little bit. And I think we all kind of need that for a lot of different things.
That's a good perspective.
It's a good way. It's a good thought process to go through and a practice.
Yeah.
We could use that in our politics a little bit more.
We were all thinking that, I believe.
Yes, right.
Are you suggesting that we're judgmental?
Nobody I know is. Right?
No.
Our royal, the broad politics.
Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, go for politics.
Maria, maybe tell us a little bit about the Heron's Meadow and what's going on there and VCA and the schools, because that's a very interesting project that you guys are involved with.
Yes. For anyone who doesn't know, Heron Meadow is a 2-acre wetland that's just east of the VCA campus, the K. White Hall and their parking lots that runs along Cemetery Road there. It is the eastern headwaters of Judd Creek, our largest salmon-bearing watershed on the island. And for many, many years, it has just sat relatively fallow, operating as a somewhat impacted natural wetland that's just become, since clear-cutting, really reestablished with a lot of invasive plants and primarily used for many years, as I understand, Bruce, you probably know more about this, but to hold large vehicles and other equipment that was used at McFeed's and other adjoining properties. So when the K. White Hall was in the planning process, there was some mitigation that had to go on for those developmental changes. And Heron Meadow was selected to be restored. And in 2019, Vashon Nature Center and Vashon Center for the Arts, I'm pretty sure it was 2019, those years right around COVID certainly all blend and mesh together. But we developed a partnership with Vashon Center for the Arts to help them restore and mitigate Heron Meadow and to help us continue that desire to blend science and art to increase its accessibility. So Heron Meadow has now, I should have pulled up the bullet points. Our Heron Meadow steward has recently moved to New Zealand, where she's undergoing some grad study work. And she knows that, like, the back of her palm. There's been countless hours of volunteers who have helped us with weekly restoration projects in the meadow. There has been hundreds of plants added, from towering cottonwoods to little tiny native asters. So we're hoping to develop that as a place for community to gather and as a demonstration site for really how lands can be restored, how long that takes, how much effort. And I'm really excited this next spring we'll be working with the environmental science students at Vashon High School to continue some of that monitoring and introduce ecological restoration practices to those students.
So is there something on the website that tells us about the progress, or is there some way we can learn about the progress?
We have a Heron Meadow page on our website, and it's not quite updated, but it's got some things on there. And VCA also has a Heron Meadow page where they have some Theirs is probably a little bit more updated. We had a UW student group from the landscape architecture school come actually during COVID, and they did a whole bunch of visioning for what the site could turn into. And so that is kind of fun to look over. They did a very professional portfolio for us of all their different designs, and that is linked. I think it's linked actually on both of our sites. So that's a fun thing to go through and imagine.
Another neat thing about the Heron's Meadow, I think, and one of the things, great things about Vashon Nature Center is working with local artists. And there's an amazing Audubon mural on the retaining wall for the parking lot. So that sort of defines the west edge of the Heron's Meadow. And Vashon Audubon has on their website a really nice presentation of that set of murals, but all native birds. And it's just a great blending of art and science and sort of restoration. I mean, it's a very powerful project. So
yeah, that's true. Thanks, Bruce, for bringing that up. It's a walk down the watershed. So as you go from the start to the end, you get the bird species change to how their places are in the watershed. And they're all birds that are threatened by climate change. So they're all local birds that that have significant impacts due to climate change.
Once again, how large is the area?
2 acres.
2 acres. Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys are also, we've talked a lot about what you're doing, but you're doing a lot more. You're doing salmon watches and shoreline monitoring and coyote surveys, wild cams, cliff birds, sea stars, stream invertebrates. I mean, just talk a little bit about the diversity and how you guys manage it all. That's just sort of, it's always mind-boggling to me. They're doing that too?
You going to take that, B?
I was going to ask you to take it.
it's hard to capture all the different things and even to organize it on our website, because lots of things integrate and mesh with each other. You know, just like we're talking about with Heron Meadow, it's a great example of our partnerships within the community, from VCA to Audubon. We also use it in our school program. So it's a partnership with the schools too. But, you know, our mission is really based around community science, research, and education to create transformative nature experiences and to build a sense of community like we've been talking about. So if something can fit under that, community science, research, or education, and has the potential to benefit our island community or the entire Salish Sea, it's pretty easy for Bianca and I to get excited about it. We're also really good at tempering one another. We have a convenient balance of what excites us, I think, and where we want to go, and knowing, okay, when to maybe pump the brakes, and when to govern one another in, okay, a big thing we're only 10 years old as an organization, and we've wanted to grow strong roots and do our programs well, not just do programs. And so I think that's always kind of the core of where we come back to, is can we do that well?
I have one more question. Funding. Where does your funding come from, and what kind of budget things do you have?
Yeah. Good question. We are heavily grant funded. So we have a NOAA grant. We have foundation grants. We have grants from King County, contracts. We have a contract with the Washington Department of Transportation to do some monitoring of the Tahlequah restoration site. We have a contract with the schools that's supported by the Schools Foundation. And we also get a lot of our money that allows us to be flexible comes from donors and from the general public, because when you write a grant, you're writing it for a specific thing. And so a lot of the times ideas come up from our Facebook pages or from our volunteers of, this is a question I'm really excited about, and I really want to get, get understood more in the community. And if we, and we like, we love to respond to those things. And it's that, those general donations, which allows us to pilot some new stuff. So we're always looking for that too. And we're trying to also grow our programming income this year to balance out the grant income and give us a little bit more flexibility to do workshops for people in classes.
One of the projects that interests me, and maybe you could just talk about it, we're getting down the last 3 or 4 minutes here, but you're monitoring beaches on Outer Quartermaster Harbor where there are bulkheads, where there have never been bulkheads, and where bulkheads have been removed. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what you're discovering about removing bulkheads?
Yeah, sure. So King County has a few restoration sites on Vashon where they have bought the land from willing landowners and then they've taken down the bulkhead. And we wanted to understand better what happens when you do that. Does it return to its natural state? The hypothesis is that a lot of, you know, bulkheaded areas are making it harder for salmon to survive and for their prey forage fish, because they basically block the connection between the terrestrial landscape and the marine landscape. So, 75% of the food of a young salmon's diet comes from the trees that overhang from the falling insects. So if you cut open a juvenile salmon's stomach, it's going to be 75% terrestrial insects. And so when you have a bulkhead, sometimes you don't have that overhanging vegetation and you don't have that food source. So that's one example of the connections that are lost. And so we just wanted to track that and see, you know, how, when you take down a bulkhead, what happens. And we're finding that, that we are getting some great connections and more fish use at these sites. Once they're restored.
Great. Well, this has just been a fascinating discussion, and I really appreciate both of you guys joining us and sort of helping us and the community understand what you guys are doing. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, sure. So
and
next
now week, I can sit here and watch the rest of the game.
It's at halftime right now. So
yeah. Halftime. And yeah. The score is Argentina 2.
Croatia 0.
Croatia zip. Too bad. Mm-hmm. Next week, the next edition of the Brown Briefly will feature Karen Hogan. Kevin, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I will just a little bit of an introduction to next week's guest on Small Talk. As many of us know, we now have a former president who is threatening to dismiss the Constitution of the United States. Meanwhile, in the real world, the consequences of these types of conspiracy theories create real concerns in communities like Sequim, where in 2020, their own town mayor advocated QAnon as a truth movement, which he encouraged his constituents to learn more about. So Karen Hogan is one of a number of activists in Sequim who responded to this information and focused on the health of our U.S. democracy. So we're going to hear from Karen about her experience in the small town of Sequim and her perspective on our democracy based on the results of her work. So I hope folks can join us and hear about that.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. So for Maria, Bianca, Kevin, Truman, Craig, and I'm Bruce Hallman. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week on the Brown Briefly.